We once no step we missed.
Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. That is the voice of our next guest, perhaps an unlikely addition to our Project Milwaukee series on clean energy. We've talked about a lot of different angles to the equation this week. We've talked politics, economics, and technology. What we haven't gotten into is the arts angle. Actually, the worlds of energy and music within the life of Jamie Lynn Fletcher are pretty distinct, but she adds a unique dimension to our series. Fletcher is a musician who lives in Wisconsin's Fox Valley, but when she's not playing music, she's working in opposition to large-scale wind farms, pointing to health concerns of hers and others who live near wind turbines. Many public health researchers have evaluated the reports of health maladies related to wind turbines and found scientific evidence lacking, but Fletcher says the effects are very real. Fletcher joined us in the studio for a joint interview. I spoke with her mainly about her music. Environmental reporter Susan Bentz talked with her about wind power. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
This is a smoky voice, smoky sound you have crafted. How did your voice develop? And not just your singing voice, but, right. You know, the voice you are as a musician.
Well, this is – it's interesting. I didn't start singing publicly until 4.5 years ago, actually. I tried my hand at it about 13 years ago in this little jazz ensemble at UW-Madison, and – got a bit of interest, but I was terrified. I was still scared to death, and it was nothing I was ever going to do because everybody wanted to be a singer. But shortly after that, I went in, got a master's in broadcast journalism, and one of the strong points they picked out was the voice, essentially. As a kid, this is interesting, we didn't have a lot of female or chick singers in the house as far as music was concerned. Dad really loved the Ink Spots and, you know, the Mills Brothers, Frank Sinatra, so it was very male-oriented. And Mom loved Elvis and Tony Bennett and all of that. So if I ever did sing along secretly to anything, and I had a huge crush on Bing Crosby when I was a kid. Did she actually admit that?
Wow.
I thought Bing Crosby was absolutely great as a singer. And so I just, the ear kind of bent to that sound. And both of my parents have lower voices. So that's just naturally what happened. And when I decided to open my mouth 4 years ago, after my father had passed away, and it was a progression of writing some songs and writing a song for Dad and needing to get it out, needing to get this other form of expression out that I couldn't get out very well elsewhere, you know, just on piano or playing trombone. And it was mostly just overcoming the fear. And I tried a little bit here and there and actually recorded the first songs I started writing. I didn't have a singer at my fingertips, so I had to do it myself. And it was just so nerve-wracking. And, you know, the judgment of society is just intense. We've got American Idol and all of The Voice, and everybody has become a bit of an expert on singing. So it was a matter of getting over the pressure and just deciding to do it. And then after a bit of practice, a few years, I guess it develops. And it still is developing. I have a long way to go.
Is it easier for you now?
Of course. It's much easier. You know, once you get through the criticism, and of course, I got enormous criticism when I started. I remember I was on a gig in Seoul, Korea at the Grand Hyatt just doing piano bar lounge stuff, and this very dapper individual came up, and I was doing something. Maybe it was Billy Joel or Johnny Mathis, and he came up and right in my face, and he said, "You're not a singer, are you?" I went, "Wow. Oh. Ouch." And he was a critic for the New York Times, actually. Really, it toughens your skin. You know, and you have to go, well, I want to do this. And it's making enough people happy to know that maybe something is right here. And what's important for me is more the communication, the story of it. And that's, I think, what the last CD is leaning more towards is the story aspect and trying to communicate a story and the emotion in it.
It seems like another whole level of risk, though. You know, you put yourself out there as a singer and you're singing Billy Joel songs.
Right.
And somebody criticizes you, they're criticizing your voice. Mm. But if someone criticized you for this album, they would be criticizing really who you are.
That's right. And I've put it out there for several reviews. It's gotten some great reviews from jazz entities over in Europe. And there was one, though, I sent it to this sort of internet broadcast, the review your music, and they're just sending it out to masses. You know, it could be a group of teenagers. And this is more, it is more of adult music. And I got some scathing, scathing reviews on my voice and the content. And I think, but as I was reviewing some of these reviews, and granted, it's just random listeners. These aren't experts. It's just wherever in the world. Somebody wants, oh, yeah, I like jazz, so let me hear that. but some of the comments, it was funny because I could tell that, for example, the song The Fool, that is clearly about making a very, very severe mistake. On my own part, and then waking up and realizing what's going on. But the negative comments, when I was reading them, it was clear that it really hit that person in a way that they didn't want to have to – they could associate it with it, but they didn't want to admit that, and they were upset. And it really – it struck a few chords very severely with some listeners that maybe hit a little too close to home.
Maybe don't shoot the messenger is the proper response.
Yeah, but it is what it is. You know, it's a risk on all occasions. But the skin grows tougher and thicker, and if you want to do it, you've got to be able to get through that. That was a hard lesson, and it will be. You know, endlessly, 20 years from now, with a much smokier, huskier, developed voice, there will always be somebody that you know it might not strike them in the way that they want, and that's
sure.
Okay.
Well, Susan Bentz is our environmental reporter, and this is as good a time as any to segue into the other Jamie Fletcher.
That's right. So what catapulted you into this wind energy? Yeah. I realize it's at home. So
it is at
talk
home.
A little bit about how that those projects have impacted your
well,
town.
I was in the gig in Seoul, Korea, the Grand Hyatt Seoul, and I was Skyping Mom, and she said, oh, we just got this big packet in the mail from this group, and you know, everybody's all upset about these wind turbines around here, and I don't know what the deal is. And my mom is not so politically active. She's mom, right? And I'll look at it when I get home. And so I got home and didn't think much of it and finally opened the package, and it was a DVD, and I popped it in, and it was the real-life experience of what people were going through in the wind farm in Fond du Lac. And the shadow flicker and the noise and the chickens that were, you know, laying eggs and brooding and hatching chicks with mutated wings and one leg and the animals, the farm animals that were dying. And the stories were just atrocious. I couldn't believe this. What's going on here? Because I was always for wind power, anything that was environmentally clean, of course, wind and solar, all about that. But then all of a sudden, this DVD, it just changed my life. I was like, oh, this is unbelievable. You know, this can't happen. Who would do this to people? This is supposed to be something good. So then began my own study, and I conducted my own interviews with people down in Fond du Lac, and it was horrifying what they were going through in the byproduct of the infrasound or the stray voltage from these turbines. Wisconsin doesn't have any legislation in place to control stray voltage, per se. It's, you know, where California does. And
what's the significance of stray voltage?
There was basically a lot of neutral current or dirty electricity, also electromagnetic frequencies that are, you know, either the turbines, of course, they're electrical generator. And there needs to be a mode of control for extra electricity that is produced. And there really isn't that mode of control. Or they might amplify stray voltage as well. There's a lot of issues and just a lot of really, I want to say, poor planning as far as doing this. Number one, it's the area that we're in isn't that – it's not the best on the map for wind per se. And to do it right in the middle of a rural community, it's been tragic. We've had three families abandon their homes because they can't live there anymore. They were getting sick. We've got over 50 medical affidavits now of people who are experiencing heart palpitations, dizziness, vertigo. They can't sleep, insomnia. You can talk to some and they say, our pillow vibrates all night long. It didn't do this before the turbines. What's going on? They have to go find safety from the infrasound and the vibrations down in their basement because their house reverberates too much.
So you hear from some wind advocates that these concerns are inflated, that they're, you know, blown out of proportion, that they're not substantiated?
All the time. What is your
response to that?
It's very interesting. There are certain, you know, sometimes it comes from obviously the corporate entities, and sometimes it comes from just people who they – it's so hard for them to actually believe that it would do this. And so simply when it comes down to it, anybody who challenges you know, the notion that these might be harmful in a health manner, I invite them to come up and stay in one of the abandoned homes for a week, stay for a month, stay for a few days. And, you know, we'll monitor you and everything that goes on. We have a fantastic doctor who's been very helpful with all of this in documenting cases. And, you know, if you're that much of a doubter, then come on up and find out for yourselves. And everybody I have, as soon as I bring that up, that sort of, it stops the conversation. It's like, oh, shoot. and that's okay. But people really need to open their eyes as far as what's going on. It's, for example, they're pushing the green and the clean and all of this. But these wind turbines, they've been subsidized for 20 years. They are not competitive. They don't put out the electricity that they should, because where they're siting these, the wind is not consistent. Out where we live, the wind is not consistent. So you have to have a backup means of producing energy. If the wind stops or if the turbine shut down or on and off, each time that happens, you have to kickstart on or off a fossil fuel plant, something of conventional means, and that actually puts more pollution into the air by having to turn these on and off all the time as opposed to just running them straight. And so these are things that you don't hear about. They're not sold to the general public that way, because it's just sold as clean energy.
Now, do you find within your community, your town mm-hmm. area, that there's a that people agree on this, or do you find varied opinions within your community?
It really depends. The turbine hosts themselves tend not to say anything at
by,
all.
By hosts, you mean the people who have allowed these to be built on their land?
It's tricky, because then if you have the good neighbor agreement, say it was this at Christmas time, the year before the turbines were to go in, the developers went around and they offered $1,000 to certain people within a certain radius of the turbines to have this good neighbor agreement. And so one is bound by that agreement. You know, they can't say anything then out of legal repercussions. Everybody could use an extra, you know, couple hundred bucks or $1,000 a year. And especially if you're dealing with rural communities, and as you know, rural America and the farmers, it's hard enough as it is with everything. And so, of course, a little extra money doesn't hurt. So they agree to these things, thinking you're getting this clean energy and you're doing these wonderful things. And then that wasn't the case. So as far as a consensus of agreement, yes, the majority of people in our community agree that there is a problem here and something really needs to be done, because a lot of people are hurting. And it's really tough with the governments, local governments, state governments to look at it, because there's a certain mandate that by year whatever there needs to be a certain percentage of renewable energy. And it's so tough to break through that mentality and say, okay, let's stop here. You know, let's stop before we go ahead and we hurt other people. There's so much money to be had in this. It's unbelievable.
You know, so in summary, your wind turbine concerns go far beyond the health concerns that you cited
earlier.
Of course,
yeah. I mean, health concerns, it's the most immediate. We've got one of our residents has just found out now she's full of cancer. She didn't have that. And she's been, since the wind turbines went in, she's had heart problems and endless things now, just one on top of another. And now she's got cancer. And of course, it's very tough to correlate that to, well, is it the stray voltage or do you just have a history of cancer in your family? But now that we have so many cases cropping up of health issues since the turbines went in, these problems did not exist prior to the turbines going in.
Is there let me just ask you this. Is there a such thing in your eyes as wind energy done right?
Absolutely. And this whole thing with energy independence, that's all we hear about, energy independence. But if they really wanted to do energy independence, let's make everybody energy independent on their own right. You can still have your own personal windmill. I'm not talking about an industrial turbine that's 500 feet tall. You can still have your own personal wind power that generates enough for your house, and probably you could sell some back to WPS or whoever the utility is. And if done right and controlled so that there isn't a stray voltage issue or dirty electricity seeping through the ground, I think it could be absolutely fantastic. And if they took these tax subsidies and decided, well, why don't we really make some energy independence and do it on a more individual basis and invest in the individual, invest in the people. This isn't about the goodness of energy and clean energy. This is about the money. And so the money could be utilized much differently.
So have you used music to convey these concerns?
I was going to say there is not a wind turbine song on this album.
Well, not yet. Not yet. I've had so many of my my friends and associates say, you need to do a parody on Blowing in the Wind. it might be coming. I do. Sometimes I just go off on these little rants as I'm sitting at the piano playing a blues song, or maybe I'll just be blues soloing and these obnoxious lyrics are going through my brain about tax subsidization. Jamie, gotta come up with something a little more friendly.
Well, Jamie Fletcher, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jamie Lynn Fletcher is an activist against wind farms and a Wisconsin musician. We're hearing a track from her CD called Jamie. She spoke with me and with WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz. You can listen to all of our Project Milwaukee coverage at WUWM.com. Tomorrow on the show, Project Milwaukee continues with a look at how clean energy can enter the picture on the individual home level. I'm Mitch Tighe. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I sure hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. We're NPR in Milwaukee. It's 11 o'clock, and fresh air is next.
I keep wishing I were somewhere else.